This is the Artist Experience Radio Show, and I wanted to remind our listeners that we have an Artist Experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're talking about. It's also a place we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback. And please, if you can, look at it while you're listening. You can also stream this program at tacomaradio.org. And also, we are putting podcasts of this show on my website, SheilaBlake.com. and on artistexperience.com so that you can listen at any time. And the podcast can be also be found on iTunes.
Wow, or wowdy. What a trip. This is our 60th show.
Wow.
And we want to thank you, our listeners, and our wowdy leadership for believing in Sheila and I for our unique radio talk show, The Artist Experience Radio Program. It's the only one of its kind around, and we are glad we're doing it here at Wowdy LP Tacoma Park because it's a unique radio station that believes in community. But we're also heard around the world, and we are part of the world community, and we are thankful for that. You know, being that it was the Thanksgiving Day holiday last weekend, and we didn't have our show that weekend, Sheila and I thought maybe it would be a great idea to start talking about the art of Thanksgiving and talking about this concept of Thanksgiving and some of the iconic works and illustration and fine art that depicted Thanksgiving in several ways and several art formats and media. Thanksgiving is also often associated with a bountiful harvest and a celebration of the fruits of one's labors and the land that God or Mother Earth provided for our early settlers. The day is also associated with abundance. Well, there are many visual associations in the history of art, going back to the mythologies. Many of the Greek and Roman mythologies depicted the celebration of abundance after the harvest and the concepts of the horn of plenty, which is the cornucopia. There's a huge cachet of art that depicts these harvest stories and overabundance, but we want to concentrate on our American tradition here today. Shockingly, there's only a few paintings that depict Thanksgiving in the fine art realm, either historically or metaphorically. The original Pilgrims and Puritans brought this holiday from England to New England in the 1620s to the 1630s. It was a holiday titled the Day of Fasting and the Day of Thanksgiving. But the competition of the first Thanksgiving celebration comes from somewhere else.
Well, there is a recorded celebration of Thanksgiving in Virginia in 1619 by 38 English settlers there in Charles County. And in 1621, another one is recorded sparsely in Plymouth, Massachusetts. These celebrations were to give thanks to God for their arrival on the land, that they wished to be kept perpetually holy. In other words, they were on hallowed ground in the new America. The holiday was not official until it was proclaimed as an idea by John Hancock, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and then, of course, George Washington, then President of the United States, that declared it a holiday on November 29, 1789, as a day of public thanksgiving and prayer, and definitely wanting the acknowledgement of signaling favors of the Almighty God. Well, we can see that it's evolved a long way from its original concept.
Sure.
But the reason there were no Thanksgiving paintings is that there were no artists to record history, so these records were written. Most of the early American art from the late 18th century through the early 19th century consists of history paintings and especially portraits. Many of the painters who specialized in portraits were essentially self-taught. America didn't really have artists until the 18th century. There were flourishing traditions of Native American art, and when the Spanish colonized America, they imported Spanish colonial architecture and styles. But early colonial art on the East Coast relied on prints from artists in Europe. So how do you learn when there's no one to learn from? There were two great American painters, Benjamin West and John Singleton Copley. They were both born in the same year, 1738, and they were just plain talented, both of them. They both showed tremendous skill without having had any art education, or in the case of Copley, never having seen a painting until he was 30. He referred to himself as, quote, particularly unlucky in living in a place into which there has not been one portrait brought that is worthy to be called a picture within my memory.
That's pretty intense.
It's pretty intense. Benjamin West moved to London and painted historical, religious, and mythological subjects. And he had a profound influence on the development of historical painting in Britain. He was the historical painter to George III and a founder of the Royal Academy. John Copley wanted to test himself. He was painting. He did amazing work. And he wanted to test himself against the Europeans. And so he sent a painting of his to be exhibited in London. It's a painting of his brother with a squirrel. It's just fantastic. West saw it. Benjamin West saw it. And he was so enthusiastic that he pleaded with Copley to join him in London. But Copley was the main support of his mother and younger brother. And he had also married and was starting a family. And after a very successful career in Boston, when the economy was deteriorating after the Boston Tea Party, he finally went to London and then toured Italy and Paris looking at art. His family joined him in London, and they never returned to America. So Copley and West became the most successful artists in London and left a huge imprint on the development of British art. So in the 19th century, American artists became increasingly skilled. Most of their paintings were portraits and landscapes. And then, of course, the Hudson River School, starring Thomas Cole, George Innes, and Albert Bierstadt. They painted unbelievably romantic paintings depicting God and nature, and also urging man to explore the American West. They were painting America as the land of abundance.
Well, yeah, things have really changed, and not so much about the land of abundance, but about this Thanksgiving tradition. And wow, you know, we reflect on the things that we're thankful for, and I know there's a lot of people out there that do that, but the blitzkrieg and bombardment of advertising, overeating, Thanksgiving Day football classics, Black Friday, they seem to drown out the concepts of a truer meaning. You know, Sheila, I'm a bit of the philosophical type here on the radio, but I wanted to talk for a moment, as visual artists, our ability to be able to express ourselves and create an environment that is imperative to make us whole as individuals. I mean, isn't that something we should be thankful for?
Yes, we should be. It's amazing, and it's not always true. Around the world, it's not always true. But I would say the people of my generation are the luckiest people on earth, at least the people who are born white, middle class, and healthy. We were born when this country was recovering from the Great Depression, when World War II granted us a time of prosperity. It was about the future, modern technology. Everything was expanding, but we were blissfully unaware of the destruction we were creating. So if we don't feel gratitude for our good fortune, we're idiots. But now we're aware of what we've created, and we're standing sort of helpless with what we've allowed to happen, and yet still grateful for our lives. And I myself have so much to be grateful for: family, friendship, art, music, doing this show with Tom, Peter, and Bobby.
Well, thank you for that. You know, I've always believed that every human being has a gift and a talent. And I would like to take it so far that this creativity and this our ability to express ourselves is actually on the DNA. I also believe that many people, for a host of reasons, are unable to identify or uncover or expose their gifts and talents. In other words, sometimes the gifts that people have are sometimes never acknowledged or actually actualized. And I think this is a philosophical question that I have I've had for many years. For those of us that have that ability, the energies to express ourselves naturally, intuitively, and without fear, this is something we truly have to be thankful for. This imperative to express oneself in whatever way you choose, whatever art form it is, in a creative way, I think is essential to our human condition on this planet. I mean, in this, then we have something to be thankful for, and it actually has nothing to do with the turkey, cranberries, pumpkin pie, and all the trimmings. But we definitely have to be thankful for. So let's go on to those great paintings.
All right. Well, this brings us to Norman Rockwell. It's a great Thanksgiving topic, and it's also very timely. Norman Rockwell was born in 1894, and he was so damn talented that in 1916, he walked into the Saturday Evening Post offices, and he was greeted with recognition. He always modestly claimed to be an illustrator as opposed to a fine artist, and that's a subject that can be argued. But what can't be argued is that he created a hugely popular image of America through his 322 covers of the Saturday Evening Post and in Look and Life magazines. He was a national name. To some, he was a Kitschmeister, but to the vast majority of Americans, rich, poor, black, white, museum goer or not, illiterate or PhD, he was perfectly attuned to what they wanted in a picture. I loved his covers. Oh, they had humor, a sort of corniness sometimes, but what ease he was able to communicate, the fear of a kid getting a shot at the doctors, or the tired, slumped body of a dad as his son goes off to war or college, old people with apple-cheeked wisdom. By far, the most iconic image of Thanksgiving was Norman Rockwell's oil painting from 1943. It has epitomized Thanksgiving to so many, and who knows, maybe urged the possibility of healing divisions, about being happy to be together. The painting appeared in the Saturday Evening Post on March 6, 1943. Now, in 1943, Franklin Roosevelt, the president, he gave an address to Congress, and it was like a challenge. It was about the four freedoms, and they were Norman Rockwell decided to illustrate the four freedoms as a contribution to the war effort. They were freedom of speech, freedom to worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. The works toured the United States in an exhibition that was jointly sponsored by the Post and the U.S. Treasury Department, and through the sale of war bonds, they raised more than $130 million for the war effort. The freedom from want is a family at Thanksgiving, four generations sitting around a table, water glasses, no wine, white on white, with the patriarch with his black suit backlit against the window, while his supposed wife serves the turkey. It's a sort of radical composition. It's cropped so that we can only see the heads and the hands of the family, and it's as well composed with the light as a Vermeer, and as lively as the Renoir boating party. I don't want to say that these masterpieces are an equivalent comparison, but this is no quick illustration, and the turkey is as beautiful as a Vermeer loaf of bread.
That's excellent.
Oh, it's
tasty,
is.
Too.
Mm-hmm. So Norman Rockwell had done an earlier depiction of Thanksgiving in 1921 for Life magazine. The work is titled A Pilgrim's Progress, and it's a boy. He's running. He's getting away with his turkey on his back, and arrow quivers and a shotgun. And he's got rosy cheeks in a Robin Hood outfit. Perfectly painted, but yuck, it's much more artificial than his later work. But still, there's that great attention to detail. So Rockwell actually painted three Thanksgiving paintings. I think the best one is a soldier home on leave, and he's sitting peeling potatoes with his mom, and they're clearly enjoying the time together. While in the Army, KP, which is called potato peeling, is one of the most hated chores in the Army. So Rockwell said he painted life as he wanted it to be. It's a sort of limited story. It seems harmless and maybe inspirational, but I still love it. His vision of America that nowadays fits right in with the Make America Great slogan. But Rockwell was a liberal. In 1960, Rockwell rarely had painted a black American, mainly because the Saturday Evening Post had not wanted him to, but his third wife, Molly, encouraged his social conscience. And Rockwell's 1964 painting of Ruby Bridges being escorted to school by U.S. Marshals became one of his most poignant works. Oh,
unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So the critics in the 50s, they created a schism between American painting and illustration. No one knows what to do with Norman Rockwell or even Andrew Wyeth or N.C. Wyeth. They are, first of all, telling stories, but with all the sensitivity to the medium and an eye to what makes a work of art. And what about Toulouse-Lautrec or Aubrey Beardsley? Are they illustrators or are they fine artists? The art critic Robert Hughes makes the case that Rockwell's work was made for reproduction, and that they would never make an impression on the history of art. But who's writing the history? Because there was an exhibit of his work, Rockwell's work, along with the preliminary drawings from the collections of Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, at the Smithsonian American Art Museum. And right up close, those paintings were beautiful. Could he paint? Ooh. And Willem de Kooning, our greatest American modern painter, adored Rockwell. And in a painting Rockwell did of a museum goer looking at a Jackson Pollock, Rockwell had labored mightily to get the Pollock to look right, not as a parody, but in homage. He said, "If I were young, I would paint that way myself." He was never an anti-modernist. He was always in awe of Picasso. So Rockwell's biographer, Deborah Solomon, emphasizes the tortured psychology of a sickly New York boy who elevated magazine illustration to the giddy heights of eloquence and charm. Rockwell was no mere illustrator, though, and that was always his claim that he was. He invented as well as limned his stories and in the process created a grand rolling fiction of Americanness. Well, all paintings are a fiction. Finally, find me one that's not. That's what an artist is, isn't it? Not only a fiction inventing a world, I prefer to love it all. But Deborah Solomon's view was that Rockwell was an obsessive compulsive, anxiety-ridden, miserable hypochondriac, as at least two of his three schoolteacher wives and his three emotionally deprived children could testify to that.
Wow.
He didn't behave badly so much as he hardly behaved at all. His psychoanalyst, no less than the renowned developmental psychologist and the pioneer of psychobiography, Erik Erikson, is said to have remarked that Rockwell funneled all his happiness into his art. Solomon plumbs a suspicion that Rockwell was a closeted gay man, but that's almost everyone these days. On the other hand, his granddaughter, Abigail Rockwell, writes essays in the Saturday Evening Post and says, yes, he was focused on his work, but that was his poignant depiction of fathers in his paintings show what a caring father he really was.
Well, that painting, Thanksgiving, is that iconic works had so many ramifications to a host of people at the time. Remember, this work was done during World War II, and our allies during the war were not having such a good time of it. So there was a lot of backlash over that painting, over the overabundance at the table, and that our allies were not part of that overabundance. And the work really stung a bit to the Europeans. Norman Rockwell himself expressed his misgivings about the painting with this big, scrumptious turkey on a platter, since much of Europe was starving. The perception of America's overabundance had remained throughout the globe, and in some ways still does. Additionally, the Cold War was beginning with the Soviet Union, and the work conjured up images of American values, prosperity, purity, there's a lot of white in that painting, and freedom. The color palette had so much white, but of course there was some, of course, remember at that time, the Reds or the commies were really not our friends. So it was about, you know, kind of a Cold War. I would like to address the host of parodies, Sheila, that there were so many parodies on this great iconic painting. And they're published and they're out there and they just don't stop. Every year it seems to have taken a bit of this work to editorialize the original work in some way, shape, or form. We can do a whole show on this alone, these parodies, but I guess this reflects the power of the iconic nature of the true original of Norman Rockwell's version. There are almost 50 of these parodies, and most of them are pretty bad and pretty offensive, I think. Every visual format of American takes off on Rockwell's. We have Disney, Mickey and Minnie Mouse at Thanksgiving, Superman and Lois Lane, and all the superheroes at the table. We have Mad Magazine, Barbie, Betty, the Muppets, even Star Wars. And of course, how could we forget The Simpsons, Lego, anime versions, which are kind of interesting, and even into the Modern Family and Skullduggery. And there's also a Pop and Andy Warhol version, but it's not really Andy Warhol. It's just a double ripoff. That's something that I think is interesting. It rips off Norman Rockwell and Andy Warhol at the same time. Wow, that takes some scruples. And then there's the Redneck Thanksgiving by illustrator Sam Spratt, and this is what I want to talk about. This version, which is out there on the net, includes, it deludes, degrades and denigrates anything related to Thanksgiving. And it's called Redneck Thanksgiving. And its insensitivity depicts a segment of our population well, and it's very stereotypic and inflammatory. Yes, I understand it's a parody, and I do have a sense of humor. But for what purpose? Funny? It's not. There are drugs, drinking, expletives in the painting, written literally on the painting, are depicted in every disrespecting manner. Yet the work is extremely well painted and drawn, and that I have to say for the illustrator. This artist could draw, but, you know, what was the purpose it needs to be thankful for? I'll actually really never know.
Rockwell did an earlier depiction of Thanksgiving for Life magazine in 1921, and this work is entitled A Pilgrim's Progress. And it's not nearly what his later paintings were, but we all at WOD have lots to be thankful for, and it's because of listeners like you that have been with us since the beginning and our growing base of supporters and contributors to this community radio station. Our mission is to be your community radio station, and it hasn't changed, and we are proud that we have been stuck to that mission. It's our beautiful evolution and growth as our radio station here in Tacoma Park and beyond, and we thank you. If you have had that urge to contribute and support the work we are doing here, go to the website at tacomaradio.org and press the donate button. Any contribution is appreciated, and as always, it's tax deductible.
Still be loving you. When mountains crumble to the sea, there will still be you and me. Today my world, it smiles. Your hand in mine, we walk the miles. Thanks to you, it will be done. For you to me are the only one. If the sun refused to shine, would still be loving you. Mountains crumble to the sea. There will still be you and me.
Wow, that was Thank You by Led Zeppelin from Led Zeppelin 2. It's perfect for our show, and it has that, you know, that minstrel quality that the English rock groups had that maybe the Puritans were listening to as well.
Oh, I could keep listening to that album. So welcome back. You're listening to WOWD Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM. There are other famous illustrative works of Thanksgiving that we'd like to talk about. One is the work of a mentor of Norman Rockwell, and that is the artist J.C. Leyendecker, that did many versions of Thanksgiving, depictions for a variety of Saturday evening post covers. He was a fabulous painter. They were a much different mood than the famous Freedom from Want by Norman Rockwell. Some are active and lively depictions and fun, much like many of Rockwell's variety, but a bit different in sensibility. He illustrated covers of Thanksgiving that were much more whimsical, with the pilgrim, Cupid-like muscular boys vignetted on the covers, almost mischievous. Many were pilgrims and kitchen scenes with handsome, studly men and boys, soldiers, loving sons, and very luscious turkeys coming out of the oven, delicious. Only a few had the prayerful, somber view of Thanksgiving. Most were celebratory and centered around the good and the plenty. And I have to say, hot men.
All right, we'll talk about that a little bit, Sheila. Cool down,
so tell us about his life.
Okay, well, J.C. Leyendecker was a very successful illustrator and probably one of the best of the earliest 20th century. He was an immigrant from Germany with exceptional skills in drawing and painting, and he was born in 1874 and he lived until 1951. He was most famous for his posters for Arrow and Collar shirts. The shirt company, Arrow Shirts, and he had this distinguished, handsome, middle-aged man being illustrated in the poster. Dashing plus, there's no doubt about that, you know. Additionally, he was a superb illustrator for the Saturday Evening Post, and between 1896 and 1950, he did more than 400 covers and 322 other covers for other magazines. I mean, this guy... I mean, what kind of time did he have for himself? I mean, that's amazing. And he was really busy. So no other illustrator besides Norman Rockwell was prolific in the golden age of American illustration, which include early Winslow Homer, N.C. Wyeth, Howard Pyle, and Maxfield Parrish. This is one great group of American illustrators. And Norman Rockwell actually sneaks in at the end of that golden age. But Leyendecker is responsible for actually inventing the whole magazine design and art form of magazine illustration.
That is truly interesting.
He went to the Chicago Art Institute, which is an amazing place. But the family of siblings, they moved together to New York City. And he compiled a host of clients from the fabric and textile trade, like Arrow Shirts, and that's his most famous. But his favorite model was this handsome Charles Beach, who most coincidentally later became his partner, and they lived together for many years, and most of them in secret, as Leyendecker shunned the social circles which Charles Beach, his partner, did not. Nonetheless, his partner had these great galas in their New Rochelle mansion. That was a beautiful house. You can see it on the web. And he had all these rich and influential entrepreneurial New York types. But his big break came from Kellogg's, where he promoted Kellogg's Kids and Corn Flakes. Now, that's a big client, you know, when you get Kellogg's. And in the 1920s and 1930s were the height of his career. He did a lot of work for the military and the war effort as well, like Norman Rockwell, during both World Wars. He was truly a powerhouse illustrator.
Well, you know, when you talk about Kellogg's, I used to look those Kellogg's boxes had competitions on them.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, and I used to enter them all. And
oh, my goodness.
I once won an accordion.
Really?
Yeah, little. I mean, it was
like a junior accordion.
A little junior accordion. But I used to, I had a friend, Audrey, and we used to enter all the Kellogg's contests.
Wow, good for you.
Oh, it was
congratulations.
So cute.
Wow, you were giving a Landecker competition.
Absolutely. But Landecker was a terrific illustrator. He had beautiful, hot, elegant illustrations of gorgeous men. What a turn on. And those clingy shirts.
Yeah, those tight shirts on his illustration.
And, you know, the thing is that Leyendecker was a short guy. He was not beautiful, but he was extremely gifted. And his brother, Frank, also hired the artist Charles Beach to be his model. And that was a great pairing of beauty and talent. And they stayed together for many, many years.
Well, I've never heard you get so excited about illustration, Sheila.
Oh, I love
Sheila.
This
I mean, stuff. Like, ooh la la. You're kind of all over the map on this one. Okay.
Well, one of the most important paintings of that historical Thanksgiving was done by a woman artist. Imagine that, in 1914. The work is called The First Thanksgiving. The painting is 30 by 39 inches, and it is like a medium-sized painting.
And you know, this work is so nostalgic, and this is was very much in at the time, and it's known that the artist really pushed this historical accuracy. The painting was hailed as a major success, this first Thanksgiving, and it depicts one of the first Thanksgivings when the Pilgrims and the Wampanoag Indians shared the first Thanksgiving in 1621. There's a large table with some pilgrims seated and a pastor evoking prayer with his hands clasped and his head bent towards heaven. The Indians are waiting in the middle ground and ready to participate. There's some beautiful, cool lavender sky in this, and the painting is very well done. There is some accuracy that is not cool, and one is that the headdresses on the Native Americans were actually those of the Plain Indians, so that didn't make sense. And then the log cabin in the background did not even exist in Pilgrim days, so there was some problems. And so we have to, you know, we didn't really mention, but, you know, the artist is Jenny Augusta Branscombe, and she was really, really, really a good painter. And this iconic and nostalgic representation was very popular, just like Norman Rockwell's were, but 30 years earlier than Norman Rockwell's painting. Sheila, women artists of the day were kind of rare in America. I never even heard of it. Did you?
No, I never did. It's so strange. But she was very popular. She lived from 1850 to 1936, and she was from rural Pennsylvania. Her father was English, and he was a new immigrant to America, and her mother was a descendant of the people on the Mayflower. So how perfect is that for her to paint this painting? She was involved in early heritage preservation and an active member of the Daughters of the American Revolution. She was a young talent, and she found her way as a teacher and an art student in New York City. She was a founding member of the prestigious Art Students League in New York. She studied in Paris as well and was an academic painter from a host of historical subjects and portraits. She donated her paintings to the Brooklyn Museum early on, and much of her prized possessions she hobnobbed with other important artists of the day like George Henry Hall and Sanford Robertson Gifford. And she and George Henry Hall were partners. He helped her a lot with his work, and they were together. And her rendered narratives and realist works were idealizations and totally in at that time. She was hailed as one of America's artists, not to mention women artists of the day. So this painting, The First Thanksgiving, was donated by Wallace and Wilhelmina Holliday to the National Women's Museum in Washington, D.C. Gosh, it must have been in the 70s, in the early 70s, when the Hollidays were first beginning their collection. Wilhelmina Holliday came to speak at Duke, where I was teaching, and she was talking about their collection. And what she said was that they wanted to form a collection of art, and it was because women's art was available. Nobody had a collection of women's art.
That's right.
So at that time, it wasn't a political statement at all. It was just, this is what was available to them. And but because it hadn't been done before, and it was also the beginning of the women's movement. So everybody assumed, oh, my God, women's art, you know, Judy Chicago
right.
and all that. But it wasn't that for them. But then time caught up with them, and it overtook them. And so did women artists. So that now it's not a collection of sappy paintings of women and children facing the unknown sunsets, but it represents a vibrant contemporary art scene.
Oh, good for them.
Good for them.
They had a vision.
They moved with the times.
Yeah, they had a vision, too. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great.
So this painting isn't bad either. This First Thanksgiving, it's a romantic view. Well, I have no idea what pilgrims really wore, or Indians either. But it's food and prayer and the pilgrims at the table, which I guess from the headdress, the chief Indian, he's in shadow in the corner. He's not really at the table.
They're not at
the table. No table
in front of him. The Native Americans are not at the table.
Most of them are huddled on the ground.
Right.
Where somebody is stooping, giving him an apple or something. And then the chief is like really sidelined there. So I hope that they serve some food after that long prayer.
I think they finally get some nibbles. But, you know, it's amazing that in researching for this show that the three really great paintings, you know, were done by women artists of Thanksgiving. And the another female artist that it was exceptional work about Thanksgiving was Doris Lee. And the painting is titled Thanksgiving from 1935. It took about 10 years to paint this, and it resides in a fantastic American museum, the Art Institute of Chicago. And she lived from 1905 to 1983, and she had a wonderful life as a female artist from the Midwest, which is another rare thing, female artists from the Midwest. And this nostalgic work shows women bustling in the kitchen. It's like a cameo of the chaos of preparing for the Thanksgiving table, and it's quite fun. The work is done in a folksy regionalist style, reminiscent of the regionalist painters from the Midwest, like the great Thomas Hart Benton and Grant Wood. But this painting is more of a Depression era work, where hardship prevailed during the Depression, and so it's that's what most of their works were about. But this painting has the kitchen sink. It has a boy and a girl, a cat and a dog, the turkey coming out of the oven steaming. There's someone making pie crust and the platters. It's great fun, and you know, it really kind of captures that chaos in the kitchen that might occur in preparing a Thanksgiving meal.
Yeah, and the painting created quite a stir and helped gain Lee notoriety. It won the Logan Prize for her at the Chicago Art Institute, but the donor of the money for the prize condemned it for its exaggerated style, and she just found it too wild for her taste.
That's pretty funny.
It really yes, it was obviously a conservative bunch way back when, but this controversy got her major commissions with the post office murals in D.C. and work from Life magazine. She continued to paint her subjects of rural America and Americana. She traveled the world and ended up working in New York City, and she died in the art colony at Woodstock in upstate New York. But before we bring this show to a close, I just want to mention some other great American artists whose subjects were abundance or the lack of abundance. Henry Asawa Tanner, an African-American artist who painted the most humble and prayerful situations, a painting of his grandfather and his grandson across the table, they're saying grace over their scant meal. It's such a simple and heartfelt scene. Tanner was one of the first internationally known African-American artists who studied with Thomas Eakins. He could draw and paint with the very best, but he left America to live in Paris, where his race was less of an issue. Another artist not to be left out was Edward Hicks, known for his series of The Peaceable Kingdom, which included not an actual Thanksgiving scene, but there was one of a treaty with the Indians. He was a Quaker, and he saw God as light in every being, which means every person, every animal. And his paintings are odd, and the animals are depicted like people. They have so much personality.
Their eyes, especially.
Yeah, their eyes.
Yeah, at the Brooklyn Museum, they have a version. As a kid, I used to see it and used to stare. They almost used to talk to you in a very kind of innocent way.
Yes, and then the people are weird.
Yeah, it's totally in the Protestant aesthetic that, you know, in early American painting.
And I wanted to talk about Wayne Thiebaud. He's a California painter of cakes and ice cream sundaes.
Oh, yeah, he's about overabundance, too.
Yes, he is.
You get fat just looking at the paintings. Yeah. Anyway, well, Sheila, thanks for bringing those two great works up. You know, the Tanner work is truly a moment of thanks. You know, these two African Americans at this table, it is an American masterpiece in every way, shape, or form. And it's the somber colors. You're like behind them, like kind of feeling the moment of their Thanksgiving for the little that they have. And it really is a powerful painting in the American ethos. Now we finally have our last painting of the day, Catching the Turkey by famous Grandma Moses.
Grandma Moses actually had a name.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. I didn't even write it in the script, did I?
I don't know. It's so, Anna Robertson.
Yeah.
And she married Henry Moses, and she did those considered the iconic snow scenes from upstate New York. She lived in Hoosick Falls, New York, and where it can get really cold on Thanksgiving. So she did many, many paintings, and they're considered primitive, but they're also very sophisticated at the same time. This particular work, Catching the Thanksgiving Turkey, is from 1943, and the work is somewhat panoramic, and it's a hunt and a kill about to happen, and people are running around chasing these turkeys with axes.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
It is kind of crazy, and then there's a woman over on the side who's has a big fire with a big pot ready to stick that turkey in the boiling water. But it's great simplicity of color in bright white, red, and black. And they're all working together on a Prussian deep blue sky. She makes those paintings really pop. There are lots of players in the work, including lots of turkeys on the left-hand side of the frame in an awkward composition. But this was the trademark of Grandma Moses. The barnwood and the farm life in the cold winter, it is truly warm to the heart. And the eyes in the nostalgia that is Americana.
Well, we've talked a lot about folk artists and primitives, naives, outsiders, and outliers. And, of course, we had a recent show about the fantastic Bill Traylor show at the Smithsonian American Art Museum on F and A Street, which is still on, and it's a great treat for the holidays. Well, but we've never talked about Grandma Moses on the show, and she was a powerhouse, and she was born in 1860 and lived to 1961. She was 101 years old. That's amazing right there. Talk about humble beginnings. I mean, her parents were farmers in New York, and they had 10 siblings. And she worked as a housekeeper since age 12. And that just blows my mind. She was taken out of her house to work, and she was basically indentured to a wealthy man. And her employer supplied her with art materials and prints from Currier and Ives. And that's how she began her art as a child. And then she got married to a hired hand on one of the farms that she worked at in Upper New York State. And that couple lived together. They also had 10 children of their own, and five of them survived after birth. I mean, she was a mother and a wife, and she didn't begin to paint till the 60s. But she also did many embroideries and quilts and folk art objects in the form of hobby art. She did 1,500 paintings, and she charged $3 to $5 for each work. And then she received a first show at the Museum of Modern Art in 1940. And she became a cultural icon, and of course Hallmark cards got onto her work. And at age 90, she stopped kind of painting because she had severe arthritis. And it's kind of interesting because, like Jenny Augusta Brownscombe, who painted the first Thanksgiving we just previously talked about, she also was a member of the American Revolution and the Society for Mayflower Descendants. I think that's pretty amazing that both those artists were in those clubs, and it's perfect because they painted Thanksgiving Day paintings.
I know. So my closing comment for this show, which is titled The Artist's Thanksgiving, is this. Express yourself. Be who you are. Don't be afraid. If you write, you'll find that you write things that you didn't even know you were going to think. And if you paint, you don't even know what it is, how, the outcome of the painting. And then when you read it back or look back at your painting, you'll say, yes, that's me. I do agree with myself. And if you like to do anything visual, you'll have the same feeling of recognition. Yes, that's who I am. So, and if you're decorating your living space or planting your garden, we're unique individuals. Let us all shine, and let us be thankful for that.
And thank you, Sheila. Yes, I totally agree. Couldn't be said better. Yes, we have to be thankful for the gifts that we have and the talents that we have to bring and share to our fellow humanity. You know, our show today gives gratitude for the visual things we have and the opportunity to do this show as the Artist Experience Radio Program. And to you, of course, our listeners. Well, we have to be thankful for you, but I also want to personally thank Bobby Hill for all he does for us here, and also for Sheila and Peter, who also helps with our show, and of course everyone at this community radio program, Wowdy at 94.3. All these contributions that we make, we have to be thankful for. And you know, it's been a real pleasure dealing with all these wonderful people in this community. I mean, I'm learning so much about our community and also about the people that are so gifted here at Wowdy Radio. And lastly, of course, our listeners. You know, without you from the beginning, we couldn't be spreading all over the globe, because that's where we're going here at Wowdy, and we thank you. We hope we've enjoyed the show. We hope we all enjoyed the show. Sheila, tell us about this upcoming show that we have to have soon.
Sure.
Well, before the tax season.
I know it, because we keep talking about it, that Tom, you and I will be putting a series of shows together about the development of an artist and how a visual artist views their success from the beginnings of their art career to the mid-career until their late and hopefully productive life in advancing age. This is a very big topic, and we hope to tackle it soon with a series of three shows on how the visual artist sees success.
I know that show is going to be full of confessions, you know, for the IRS and everyone else. And it's a sticky subject about what is success to an artist, and you know, that's out there in the world. Well, let's stay tuned to our next exciting programming at WOWDLP Tacoma Park 94.3 FM. Stay tuned to the next exciting program with Bob Hill and this music. And this is going to be one jazzy event, as it always is. We invite you to visit our website, tacomaradio.org, and look for the program schedule. There is so much fantastic music, talk shows, interviews, and community news from so many diverse people in our community and at this radio station. Experience art and the visual in everything you do. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Let's listen up.
just want to give gratitude.